You're listening to A Stranger Podcast, www.thestranger.com.
Hi, this is Jen Graves. You're listening to Invisible, The Stranger's weekly conversation with people in art. I'm at Sam Davidson Gallery. Actually, I'm at Davidson Galleries with Sam Davidson. Hi.
Hello.
We're talking about changes at the gallery. What's happening? You're closing the contemporary space.
We're closing Davidson Contemporary in the Shiro Kaplan space, a space I dearly love. But I have decided that after 35 years, I can't do both. That space was conceived, sort of built around my relationship with Mike Sweeney and his experiences in New York and what we sort of wanted to do by taking that department out of the gallery on Occidental and giving it its own space. And I think we did some wonderful things there. Excuse me, when Mike went to work for the state, we had struggled for the first year trying to get people to understand what we were doing and to go over to that space. After that, I elected to take on the space myself and to run it to sort of get a feeling for what was happening there. And it was gradually continuing to build, but the toll on me was a bit much. And I didn't think I could effectively do both spaces with the installation and just pursuing clients and doing the things you need to do to make the gallery run effectively. And so I think...
How long was it open?
3 years. Okay. It'll be 3 years as of the end of September.
And when does it close? End of September?
End of September. We have an option for 2 more years, but I don't think that we'll exercise those just because I'd like to reconfigure the space at Occidental to relate to some of the things that we learned at the Shiro Kaplan space, where you sort of do have more succinct spaces allowing for multiple exhibitions where you can get a good look at an artist's recent work, but they don't have to spend a year and a half preparing a large body of work to fill the gallery. They can provide 8 to 10 pieces and give you a good look as to the things that are interesting to them right now. And it allows you to have multiple constituencies so that if you have 3 separate exhibitions for 3 separate artists, the people that support their work, each of those 3 would potentially bring in those clients during that month, and it would make for a stronger support for the exhibition as a whole. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things, and allowing the reconfiguring the space at Occidental to allow for that kind of movement, one space into another, where it's sort of a peekaboo thing where you see one exhibition and then around a corner or into another space, you're invited to sort of, you're visually encouraged to move into that space, and it sort of leads you through the space, and that's something that was very successful about the space at Shiro Kaplan, and we're looking to create that at the Occidental space.
How will you deal with the fact that, so right now we're at the Occidental space underneath the sort of balcony area, and up there is the Cullum.
Yeah, Beth Cullum is incubating her business, and eventually will have her own space, but it was the idea was to give her a space to experiment and get established.
Yeah, and but that sort of means that this back part of the gallery is, it's a spectacular space when you just sit. I'm not usually sitting down and looking into the front, but the ceiling is really high.
It's 16 feet.
Yeah. Oh, is that it? Mm-hmm. It looks taller. And there are these columns, which obviously it can be a pain for art.
Important
for supporting the building. And really attractive. But how will you handle this kind of, this split level? Because the back half of the gallery, or maybe a third, is much lower.
That's true. That sort of space favors smaller format, more intimate work. Mm-hmm. And so the exhibitions would be tailored to and selected for particular space that they were going to be shown in. And so obviously large-scale works won't be particularly appropriate or do well in a space that's lower ceiling and so on. So most of the reconfiguring will be in the front part where we have the wall issue. It was brick originally, and it had rubber and caustic on it, and there was no way to sandblast that and get it off. So we put stucco on it, and so we will put plywood covered with sheetrock up to 10 feet so that we can hang any way we want rather than having to work off a picture rail. And that will be allow for a lot more contemporary look. And also we'll probably get rid of the mobile walls and configure a sort of, not labyrinthian, but a certain flow encouraged by pony walls or floating walls, which will, as I say, encourage you to sort of move through the space in a particular way.
Your business is based on prints, I presume. Is that fair to say?
It's sort of evolved. Initially, it was prints until when we still had a location on Yesler. After that, we separated out the parts. The antique prints went up to the market area when we had 1915 First Avenue. And I shared a space with my wife who had an art bookstore. And we had a gallery space in the back where we alternated exhibitions and a European-style print room up front, cylinder boxes and so on. Then when she sold her business and I moved the antique prints, we at that point had moved over to the new space where we currently are at Occidental.
When was that?
In 86. And at that point, prior to that, in the space on Yesler, we had had exhibitions of antique paintings in a partnership with Alan Kohler, older American paintings every once a year. And we started to show paintings in that location because it was all contemporary work. But the smallness of that space really didn't favor large-scale paintings. We had a number of shows there, but so we, when we moved to the Occidental space in 86, that allowed for larger scale work, and at that point we put a lot more emphasis on painting and sculpture than we had been able to in the past, just because of the format of things. The antique prints went up on the mezzanine, and contemporary prints and drawings went to the back third under the mezzanine, and the front was painting and sculpture.
What's your passion?
I'm pretty heavily committed to prints, but I, in the last 10 or 15 years, have come to love a number of painters and sculptors. I guess the drawing, the immediacy of drawing and things still, and you know, the directness of working on paper, particularly through drawings, still holds a lot of interest for me. But we've had some, and continue to have some wonderful painters.
Were you an artist?
Sculptors.
Are you an
artist? I was not. Art historian background.
Okay. Where did you study?
University of Massachusetts for a master's.
Where are you from?
From here.
Really?
Yep. Got, and I went back east to school for various reasons and then came, wanted to come back.
What neighborhood did you grow up
in? Mercer Island. When it was a little different than it is now, but
what was the Seattle art scene like 35 years ago?
It was very different. It was very, very close, regional in the sense, or everyone supported each other. When you had an exhibition, the turnout, particularly places like Foster White, when it was Dick White and Don Foster, the people that they were showing were who were a lot of the heavies. Everybody in the community, art community, came out and supported. It was a wonderful opportunity to touch base with all the artists, and it was a great, very supportive environment. There was not as much work from outside. Ginny Wright, with Current Editions, and then Dukes and Calderhead, were trying to infuse New York and things happening in the East Coast and things happening in other art centers. And there was still a strong loyalty to work being produced here, and people would always seem to favor people from the region over people from outside. There was always this, oh, we don't want to believe that New York has it over the Northwest, so we'll support our people, a kind of attitude. And then that gradually changed. Linda Ferris brought in people. Diane Gilson, there were a number of important dealers who, you know, had a big effect on changing that attitude.
What's your attitude about that?
Well, we're sort of a farm team for New York in many cases. If we find somebody There's always many of the artists still look to New York as sort of the stamp of approval, and so they're always looking for an opportunity there. And as soon as they get an exhibition opportunity there with somebody worthwhile, they go there. The prices change, and it becomes more difficult if we're allowed to continue to offer the work to meet those prices in this neighborhood where we started the work and the people got used to a certain price structure, and suddenly it's twice or three times what
Broadway
it was.
Broadway Danny Rose sort of
exactly.
effect.
So it's there's a maybe sometimes a bitterness, but it's...
I never thought of you as a Broadway Danny Rose character, but it's kind of great.
but I think it is just the way it is. I mean, if you make it in New York, obviously it means a lot, and more power to you. There's less of that now, it seems, and I don't know whether that's because your work can be seen so many ways without having to go and live there, and you can still get exhibition opportunities.
What do you think of Seattle now? What do you make of the art? What is missing? What is needed? You have a long view.
I'm not sure how worthwhile my opinion about that is in terms of what, because I don't... When you have a gallery, I guess the Achilles heel for me is that I don't get out as much as I'd like, and it's partly because of the two spaces. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very important thing. And some dealers regularly get through the galleries and get to see at least what's going on here, so they have probably a much better and balanced perspective than I do of what's really happening here. I do see that right now, or I do sense that it's a much broader scene than it's ever been in some senses. I think there are opportunities for young artists to get exhibited early on. I mean, we've got Larimore Project doing interesting things that are totally different than was really sort of allowed for before.
What do you make of where the museums are?
I sort of wish that the sculpture park had been a little more regionally directed to showcase the strengths of people from this area, rather than sort of the touchstones of the international things that you could find anywhere. In other words, it would be much more interesting to me, for instance, to come to the sculpture park and see the best of the Northwest and important other people from around the world, but really a strong representation of what goes on here, whether it was through temporary exhibition where you had a dedicated an area where you could, you know, every 4 months or every half a year, change it over and give some exposure to the people that are doing good work here. It's so hard for sculptors anyway to really have their work seen that it just seems like such an opportunity, and it just seemed a little bit squandered on some familiar faces, and so I guess that was the regret. My big beef with the Seattle Art Museum, for instance, is their lack of commitment to prints and works on paper. And blatantly so, in terms of what curatorial commitments they make, in terms of space, exhibition opportunities, and so on. And we sort of relinquished that to Portland in a way that it's, to me, really unfortunate. The Gilkey Center is just such a magnet, and then they...
In Portland.
And it didn't need to be that way. And there are collections in the area which could go to Seattle, but I think Cornish is making more of an interest in dealing with prints and works on paper, so I would probably be more inclined to direct people there. The Fry has changed so radically with the sort of contextualizing contemporary work in terms of the permanent collection there.
How do you like that?
Some of it I like. I mean, some of the contemporary work that's been shown is wonderful. Sometimes I think the older work gets trivialized or used in a way that maybe it's different than I think the people who founded the Fry would really appreciate.
But can you give an example? That's really interesting.
Oh, gosh. No, I can't quickly.
Okay.
But it's just a sense. But I think it's revitalized and made a lot more people want to go to the Fry and think of it as a viable institution. Uh-huh. So it's sort of a mixed thing.
Did you see the Dario Robledo shows there?
I didn't get to see it.
You didn't? Okay, because I was going to ask you about that and about that, putting that in context.
So, you know, it's both good and and bad in my mind. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's just regret and longing for some things that I liked about the past, but I do love some of the contemporary work that's mm-hmm. been brought in has been excellent. And the things that are being said by the juxtapositions, mm-hmm. I think, are good and useful. And as far as the Henry Gallery...
Wait, before you switch...
Oh, sorry.
Can I ask, no, I was interrupting you. But do you have a favorite in the Frye Collection?
Oh, is it Costa?
Everyone has a favorite.
I mean, there are a number of pieces that I like in that collection, and I haven't...
What's the one you're thinking of? What does it look like?
Oh, it's a series of ducks.
The ducks?
Mm-hmm.
You like the ducks?
I love the ducks.
You know, everyone loves the ducks.
The handling. The handling is so beautiful. It's so beautifully painted.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, if I walk through the collection, I could pick out,
right.
six or eight that I like right. for totally different reasons.
Right.
But I consistently remember that when I think of the Frye,
yeah, yeah,
just as
yeah.
a kid when I went there, and I thought, oh, my God, these are so beautifully rendered. Yeah. I yeah. love this thing. Anyway.
Sorry. Okay, now the Henry.
The Henry is edgy and has done a lot of things that sort of seem consistently more edgy, and I think it's good in the context of the university. It's gone through so many, not so many directors, but a number of directors have totally different visions for that place, that it's been interesting to see it evolve.
What did you make of Richard Andrews' tenure? It was 20 years, right?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty consistent. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of respect for Richard. Mm-hmm. And
what of his vision would you like to see continued in Sylvia Wolfe's tenure? She's new.
Mm-hmm. I guess the willingness to consistently take risks, mm-hmm. since you've got that, in a sense, opportunity, mm-hmm. more so than any of the other institutions,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. without any fear of losing an audience or mm-hmm. anything else, you could be brave and mm-hmm. provocative, and I would hope that would continue, because it certainly needs to be a part of that scene.
Can you talk more specifically about Seattle Art Museum's lack of commitment to prints? I don't know much about that.
It's never been a particular priority in the past. When Rod Slemons was here and others, it was lumped together with photography, and there was a place in the dungeon, in the catacombs in the basement, mm-hmm. where there's some flat files, and it was minimized then, and the attitude seems to be consistent with the current approach, having been at a Seattle Art Dealers meeting and heard the current curator answer a direct question as to what interest the museum had essentially in prints and making more of a commitment in terms of curatorial or storage or exhibition space and so on.
This is the contemporary curator.
Correct.
Michael Darling.
Michael
mm-hmm.
Darling. And his pretty direct response was no, there really wasn't a plan or an inclination to move strongly in prints and works of paper.
Hmm. Do you get the sense that that's because of lack of resources, a lack of conviction? What is the lack of interest? You know, what is that?
It's a good question. Maybe they feel that with the sculpture park, there's a lot of funds needed to flesh that out and finish, or at least sustain that important project, and they've just finished reworking the Asian.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they feel that they're being asked to be pulled in too many directions at once. Mm-hmm. But for a fairly minimal investment compared to the things we've just talked about, it seems that there would be an opportunity to garner some of the collections locally and to be able to add to them with significant works with a much smaller outlay in some of these other areas. So it's a little confusing to me when there's a strong print tradition, for instance, in the Northwest, one recognized by Gene Barrow, formerly of the Brooklyn Art Museum, in the 70s acknowledged it as one of the primary areas, producing disproportionately high-quality prints, to just sort of give that over to Portland or just to ignore it or not build on it. Seemed like an unfortunate decision.
Mm-hmm.
So I would wish that they would you know, allocate or think about allocating either more resources or someone to deal with it curatorially, because
without, you know, divulging any of your, you know, collector's secrets or names or anything, what is out there that we're missing or will be missing if those collections go somewhere else?
Well, there are a couple of good old master collections locally that people are still trying to find an appropriate home for. There are a couple of good contemporary collections.
What constitutes a good contemporary collection? What period exactly, since contemporary can be so very long?
That's a good point. Some are, a couple of them are specific and maybe don't involve as many big names, and then others that sort of touchstone names in maybe workshop prints, collaborative prints from some of the big workshops. There are a number of people that have built up collections here. I know Greg has had good success placing a number of works here by important print artists.
Greg Kosira.
And so I think that it would be both big name workshop and collaborative works, as well as artist-produced and published works in the contemporary area. The look would be pretty broad. I mean, and there's some wonderful historic collections that were built around, for instance, women that were in the shadow of their better-known husbands or partners, which made a very interesting and very thorough exhibition, turned into partly into a book by one pair of collectors here.
When was that exhibition? Where was it?
The exhibition I haven't seen, but the book is out.
What is it called?
Something in Copper.
Or if you know the name of the authors.
The Langs.
Okay.
Kurt and Gladys Lang.
Okay. You know the way. Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off though.
No, that's fine.
Okay. We're sitting surrounded by the prints from one volume or one set,
collection,
of the SMS Collective from 1968 with works by, you know, pop artists and then conceptual artists and, you know, and plenty of big names. And I'm curious, this is something that I'm wondering about in terms of the general business model. You know, do you sell most of this work from the walls, or do you sell most of your prints off of the web from the catalog?
Increasingly, work that's well enough known that people could be familiar from catalogs or printed material in the past, increasingly are confident enough to purchase through a website. The traffic in general, I think, has diminished in proportion to the increase in activity on the website. And so in many cases people are very familiar, for instance, with the SMS portfolio and have looked for certain things. Often it's only sold by section or as a complete thing, so they've always wanted a handful of pieces out of the portfolio. So whenever it gets shown, they always try and zero in on the pieces by either Duchamp or Lichtenstein or Mel Ramos or whoever it happens to be that they're particularly interested in, and try and get those pieces. So it's, but definitely the website plays an important part now, particularly for antique prints or prints that are well enough known that they can be traded and people would have seen them in person somewhere else and can feel confident that if there aren't condition issues that they can pursue it.
Speaking of this show, is your Lichtenstein, is your Man Ray, is your Duchamp, are those still for sale or have they already been bought?
I have to ask Emily. This is her department. I haven't gotten a chance to quiz her about that.
Okay. So, Sam, I want to know how long you've been wearing a bow tie.
Pretty much from the beginning. My dad wore bow ties.
Your dad wore bow ties? Uh-huh. What was his name?
Sam.
Really?
Yeah, same old thing.
Do you have any of his old bow ties?
Yeah, they're not very great, though. Oh. My wife, Elizabeth, makes my ties in many cases, and she doesn't
agree. She makes
them? Yeah, we find fabric when we're poking around. She's looking for fabric for things that she wants, and I'll be waiting or poking around, and I'll find something. And She'll make me a few ties for her birthday or something like that.
Did she make this tie you're wearing today? So this tie, we should say, is a burgundy tie with sort of yellow-ish
gold. It comes from a Japanese fabric shop that she likes a lot. It was in Berkeley. So we go in there for her to get stuff for blouses or whatever she's getting. In some cases, there's some wonderful ones that the pattern lends itself to bow ties.
So what do you feel is the difference in meaning between the regular tie and the bow tie?
Well,
is your interpretation?
I think that it has a lot of unfortunate associations as well as a few good ones. You're obviously willing to stand a little bit to one side, but I think that it stays out of your food, and it's easy to tie,
and you look festive.
Yeah, you look festive, and like you might have a sense of humor, and willing to roll with it a little bit, which I'm happy to do, because I like nothing better than some repartee with somebody. So I'm not looking to look straight, but I would like people to feel like they could engage. When they come to the gallery, I'd like to talk to them about the work or about what they're interested in and so on. And so this makes them feel comfortable or think, oh man, this guy is weird. I don't really care what they think as long as they're willing to engage and talk about it.
Well, I wholeheartedly approve of the bow tie.
Thank you.
I have a partner who wears bow ties, and I really do approve.
They're not a bad bunch.
They're great. It's a great bunch. There should be some kind of a club.
There is a club.
There is?
Yeah.
What? You're not a member of the club?
I was invited a couple of times, but
to be a member of a bow tie club?
Yeah. But
yeah.
I don't know. It wasn't so much my take on the bow tie, so.
Wow. Is it a national bow tie club?
No, this is regional, but I guess in a lot of major cities they have them.
Really? Wow. What is their take on the bow tie? Is it more linked to older traditions?
I guess. It's sort of more clubby, and I'm not so clubby.
Wow.
So.
Well, thanks for all this repartee.
You're so welcome, and thank you for the opportunity to talk with you about it.
You've been listening to Invisible, the Stranger's Weekly Conversation with People in Art. Thanks.